Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
It is Canucks Central. It's not game day. It's not even a practice day. It's skills comp day.
Skills day.
Let's go. Pumped. Elias Pettersson in the hardest shot. Quinn Hughes in the fastest skater. Jacob Markstrom in the goalie year. Doing all the goalie things.
He's doing goalie stuff.
It's unfortunate.
Making saves.
Yeah. I wish there was more the goalies could do.
What about Because that's sort of like empty net shooting competition or puck handling behind the boards, you know?
Low key, I think the goalies are the funnest guys on a team.
Goalies are like the drummers of the NHL.
Yes.
Weirdos, but fun weirdos.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they almost get relegated to bystanders in this event because it's you're just in the way.
Yeah.
For all the others. We got to collectively find some skills for the goaltenders to do. And you're right, puck handling, whatever it is.
The worst was when the NHL kind of tried to emulate the dunk contest with the breakaway style competition.
Yeah.
It's in that, the goalies are literally the net in the dunk competition.
They're the thing to be defeated. Nobody's cheering for the rim.
Nobody is cheering for the rim.
Oh, man. Yeah, I guess some sort of obstacle course with them in their gear.
Yeah, that'd be good. They make them do all the normal ones. Fastest skater in their gear. Pass shooting hardest shot your gear.
Accuracy shooting for the goalies would be really fun. That would be, I'm in for that.
Let's do that. They should get to participate in all of them.
CC Gary Bettman on this.
Make some kind of American Ninja Warrior course for them to run in their full gear.
We'll ask Wish this too. How do we get the goalies more involved?
Jacob Markstrom's having some flashbacks. He's like, man, we tried the chariot race. I don't know if I want to do that one again. Man.
let the goalies shoot on the goalies in their pads?
There's a lot of options.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. And also you heard the shooting challenge that they're going to be having from the stands. And they're trying to be aiming for targets on the ice. That's going to be a lot of fun.
That's going to be awesome. It's just going to be really cool to see.
Yeah. That's all tonight. But we did want to get into this conversation, as we alluded to at the end of the Scott Rintoul show. Ooh, by the way, Scott's going to be back on Monday as we get ready for a game day versus the Vancouver Canucks. Or versus the St. Louis Blues. Sorry. Losing track of who's playing who here.
It's all good.
As the conversation ended, it just seems like we're in a new stage of kind of what fandom expectations are here for fans. And last year it was about tanking or playoffs, and now it's just changed. And I just, you were posing the question, has our opinion of tanking changed?
And I'm not sure where I fall in this, because as I said, I was never an extreme tanking advocate or an extreme tanking opponent. I probably leaned a little bit more to, I see the logic behind it. But the thing that I never understood was people, you're instilling a losing culture. Everyone would go on about that. It's but other teams finish last. Is there a difference between finishing last unintentionally versus doing it intentionally?
Well,
and I'm starting to kind of think maybe there is.
I think there is, because there's a human element you can't
for sure
ignore. I think it's just a downer on the entire franchise. I forget even players.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
To come into work tonight and be like, hey, man, we're trying to lose today. And that sucks. And then how do you kick out of that? And, we talk about all the time when it comes to players, a struggling team when they're in March. It's they'll flip the switch. Flipping the switch is tough. Now imagine trying to do that on an organizational level, right? That's always tough. We'll get into this again on the other side of when we wrap up here with Greg Wyshynski, who is live from St. Louis, getting ready for the All-Star Game for ESPN. Greg, we do want to get into hockey, some hockey stuff, but Jamie wanted to throw a different style question at you.
So, Greg, you wrote a great primer on the Royal Rumble event happening on Sunday, so I got to start. Who Who's winning the match this year?
Well, the smart money is on Roman Reigns winning the match to either set up a match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, but most likely with the Evil Fiend at WrestleMania. But, you know, like I wrote in the piece, man, the cool thing about the Rumble is trying to predict what's going to happen, including the winner, is also always a hapless venture. It's second only to Mania as my favorite pay-per-view every year, just because of just how ridiculously fun it is. And you know, Pat Patterson is the guy who created it, and the reason he created it was because he knew fans loved when people ran in to interfere in matches. And he's like, what if somebody did that 28 times? And that's all you need really in wrestling, is that thing 28 times.
I know literally nothing about wrestling in its current state right now. Doesn't Roman Reigns win often?
He does, you know, but like he's sort of their de facto John Cena type hero type, where you know, they put him over and make him the face of the company as the good guy, and then the fans all sort of reject him in being in that role. But the real intrigue is that Brock Lesnar has entered the Rumble at number one, claiming that no one was worthy of wrestling him for his title at the pay per view. And in my wildest dreams, he would win the Rumble and then wrestle himself at WrestleMania for the title. So, like, throw himself around the ring like Ed Norton in Fight Club just for 5 minutes. But probably won't happen that way.
We will get to hockey here, I promise, in just a second. But just before we came on, we were talking to our producer, Justin Morissette, and apparently Edge might make a shocking return. Is that in the cards? What's going on there?
Yes, the Rumble is also really good for shocking returns and nostalgia acts. One of my favorite moments was when Kevin Nash returned as Diesel in the Rumble about 8 years ago. So, yeah, there's noise that he's going to return at some point. And having his music hit in the Rumble would no doubt be a very memorable thing. I highly recommend the Royal Rumble if you've never seen it. It's kind of like Weekend Update on SNL. Like, it's never, sometimes it's great and sometimes not great, but it's never boring. So that's why I like the Rumble.
It's kind of like the marquee event for, you know, like I know WrestleMania is the big day, but Royal Rumble is kind of a cool side event. It kind of brings in what you're talking about. It has some anticipation level to it, and it's kind of a unique event, much like the skills competition is what I'm getting at. It's a fun little side piece to what the NHL season is. What are you looking forward to tonight when it comes to the competitions?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe players shooting pucks over the fans from the fans onto the ice.
There's no way this can end poorly, right?
I mean, it could be a train wreck. It could be, I don't know, a lawsuit. But more than anything, it's going to be something unique. And, you know, I made the prediction in our All-Star Roundtable on ESPN.com this morning that I think this might create the most non-hockey media buzz for the NHL since the debut of Gritty. Like, it's going to be such a spectacle to see this sort of dude-perfect trick shot, you know, from the stands thing. We've just not seen this before in an all-star game format for any of these sports. I mean, it's not like you have the best shooters in the NBA chucking threes from the mezzanine, right? So I think it's going to be one of those things where the highlight's going to be played, and it's going to be a real bit of curiosity for people. And the cool thing about it that the NHL has done is they're not just picking people that they think are going to do well at the event. They're much, much more focused on picking personalities. So you've got, you know, guys like Tyler Seguin and Patrick Kane and people that can yap a little bit. And then both Kachuk brothers, which is going to be a lot of fun if they have to go, like, say, you know, mano a mano in this event. So I love the skills competition to begin with. I'm very excited for it this year because of that event, and also because they seem like they got rid of all the things that make these guys look bad and get them frustrated, like those mini nets and those light up gates and stuff. So it should be a fun one tonight.
Greg, one of the things Bick and I were talking about is we love the skills competition too, except the goalies very much get the short end of the stick. You know, they're in the save streak event this year, which is basically just doing their normal job, trying to stop guys on breakaways. Would you have a radical idea for how to get the goalies more involved in having some fun at this event?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I've always wanted to see is for them to show off their own skill. The best idea I've come up with for that would be to do the big switch, to have the goalies take off their pads pick up a stick and take shootout attempts against skaters that are now playing the position of goaltender. Now, the flaw in this plan is that the skaters aren't trained to be goaltenders, so you run the risk of, like, Connor McDavid blowing out his groin in a skills competition. You don't necessarily want that, so maybe what you end up doing is doing what they did in the that breakaway challenge competition they had a few years back, where you just get some, you know, beer league or Darren Pang or somebody as your goalie, as the goalies get to have their own shootout event.
Don't pick on Darren Pang. What's going on here?
I'm just saying they're a bit older. You know, there's a denigration of skill as one ages. I think I, you know, am exhibit A of that. I'm just saying that, you know, you don't want, you know, Jordan Binnington, you know, back there saving everything all the time when these goalies are just trying to score in a lacrosse move.
Couldn't they just do the player events just as a goalie, like a fastest goalie skater and, you know, shooting accuracy, maybe not on the net, but you set up different targets and just do that?
Sure. I mean, why not? And get them involved and have them do things that aren't goaltending.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I was a fan of the full padded goalie races. I thought it was a really fun spectacle the couple years they did it. There's got to be ways to get them more involved than simply just being, cause essentially, like if you're a goalie in the All-Star game, why are you even showing up? I mean, you're a prop. You're there to get scored on and just stand around while, you know, these guys all play 3-on-3.
The reference we made is they're the rim in the NBA dunk contest. Like, no one's cheering, no one's cheering for the rim whatsoever.
Precisely.
Okay, so as the NHL is all, the entire NHL world is there, obviously, and there's the in-season factor to it. Everyone's looking forward to what happens after the All-Star break. Is there any buzz of, you know, as players talk or as execs are in the area of, you know, what can these next 3 weeks look like around the NHL of some moves that we could see?
Well, Chris Kreider got bugged yesterday pretty good by people asking, you know, everything from his contract status with the Rangers to somebody outright asking where he wanted to play next, which kind of drew a dirty look from the Rangers PR guy.
He's making the trade for sure, right? He's doing it on his own.
But, I mean, that's the only sort of trade deadline topic that was being bandied up about. I think one of the interesting things as far as anticipation goes is the Alex Ovechkin chase of 700 goals, and how many people and players were sort of engaging on the topic of not only him hitting 700 over the next, you know, couple weeks, but also, you know, having a realistic shot at catching Gretzky's record, and how many players thought, you know, he has a legitimate shot at doing it. And one of the themes that I found, I got this from both Patrick Kane and from Bernie Federko, the Hall of Famer with the Blues, I spoke to about this, is it's the way that he scores goals that really puts him on track to potentially break this record. If, you know, if 35 of his, you know, 50 goals were stuff scored on a breakaway, I mean, that doesn't give you a lot of confidence because eventually the wheels have to sort of slow down, right? But the fact that he has just this mechanical shot from the same spot of the ice and no one's been able to stop it for 15 years gives a lot of the goal scorers in this league hope that he's going to just be able to continue to do that skill on an elite level, and eventually the goals are going to add up and he'll get past Gretzky's record.
Greg, you mentioned Chris Kreider getting a lot of questions about the upcoming trade deadline. He might be the biggest name, which, you know, no slant against Chris Kreider. He's a great player, but in years past, we've seen maybe a higher caliber player be on the market leading up to the trade deadline. Do you think there are any surprise names that we're not necessarily hearing a lot about right now that could end up being shopped before the deadline?
Tough to say, only because, you know, we are a few weeks away from the deadline, and everybody is so bunched up right now, particularly in the Pacific Division. It's hard to really get a sense of who might be selling. You know, a few weeks from now, you know, all it takes is a 5 or 6 game losing streak, and all of a sudden your entire worldview might change. I mean, as it stands, you're just looking at the usual suspects right now as far as the dregs of the league. You know, the LA Kings looking to maybe move Alec Martinez, maybe looking to move Jeff Carter. You know, the Devils looking to move anybody not named Nico Hischier or Jack Hughes. It's one of those things where you have such a limited scope of teams that you know are going to be active in a selling mode at the deadline. It's hard to really identify some surprise candidates until we see what the standings look like as we get deeper into February.
Does that not lend itself to, you know, why one of these teams isn't acting faster to want to sell? Because, you know, if it is a seller's market right now, maybe you capitalize in advance, kind of like how the Devils did with Taylor Hall.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and I imagine there's going to be a few of those deals that are made, you know, as we get closer to the deadline, well before the deadline, to try to lock in a price. You know, anytime you talk to a general manager with a trade deadline, they'll say the same thing, which is that the closer you get to it, the more outrageous the prices get. So you figure that a lot of these guys want to, you know, try to get their business done as early as possible. But again, I think it also speaks to what we were just talking about, which is a lot of these guys are trying to really get a gauge when, you know, 2 points separate, you know, first from, fifth or whatever in the Pacific at times. A lot of these guys are probably trying to gauge exactly how deep they should go into the rental market because they don't really have a handle on how good their team is.
Greg, is there a team that you think is under particular pressure, whether it's from fans or ownership, to make a big addition at this deadline?
I don't know if it's pressure necessarily, but I definitely think a team like the Boston Bruins knows, much like they have in the previous couple of years, that there's going to have to be the acquisition of a winger or another scoring forward to kind of balance out that lineup a little bit. I do wonder if they regret not having gone harder after Kovalchuk, seeing how he's played for Montreal and clearly has something left in the tank. I think it would have been an interesting addition to that team on the wing. But the problem to me, especially for a team that was the bridesmaid last year, is clearly still built to win now. I think there's going to be, you know, some pressure to make that kind of move, the Marcus Johansson move, the Rick Nash move, but hopefully one that works out better than the Rick Nash move did, for Boston to kind of, you know, push forward and try to challenge the Cup again.
What do you kind of make of their season? Because they started out so hot, and then, you know, you kind of go through it the last, you know, since December, they've been kind of a middling team, and Tampa Bay has closed this gap, and it feels like we're trending to, once again, a Boston-Toronto first-round series.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, you know, they're a team that I think can sometimes just hit cruise control and be really good for a few weeks. They've had some, you know, injury issues here and there, as they often do. I mean, they're a team that's just built for the postseason, though. I don't think the Bruins really care if they finish first in the division or second, you know, whoever they have to play in the first round. The focus is never going to be the regular season with this team. It's always going to be, you know, making sure that everybody is healthy and ready to go, and that they have a full complement of a roster ready for the playoffs.
He is Greg Wyshynski of ESPN and also, I guess, ESPN Wrestling as well. Wish, thanks a lot, and enjoy the All-Star competition and enjoy the Royal Rumble.
Oh, as always. Thanks, Wyshynski.
It is Greg Wyshynski, again, of ESPN. You can follow him at Wyshynski.
He's a dual threat.
What would the NHL Royal Rumble equivalent be?
Oh, man. It would be, you know what it kind of would be, is if anyone's been to Rogers Arena for a Canucks game this year, the little vignette they show on the screen before with where they're fighting the ice zombies, but it's not a normal game.
But there's got to be like a real competition we can...
But would it be like a stick hand?
Okay,
kind of free-for-all
thing. I got it. Okay. So the skate into the ring... Okay, so let's make the ring the neutral zone.
Okay, let's do it.
Or some sort of confined space. I suppose like the one offensive zone.
It could be one offensive zone.
Okay, so one offensive zone. The run up to the ring would be you enter from the tunnel on the other side. So you have to skate into the zone. But it's just a puck handling Royal Rumble. So you have your puck and you enter the offensive zone. And as soon as your puck exits the zone, you're out.
Okay, yeah.
And it's just 30 guys... Eventually, I'll go in there.
And you have to clear the other player's puck.
Yeah, and you can't lose your own.
I like it. That's
NHL All Star. Call me. I got tons of ideas.
That's one of my anyone who played youth basketball or high school basketball. One of my all time favorite drills. You would do that. You would slowly close the area.
Yeah.
You have to keep your dribble alive while swatting the other guy's
Soccer
ball away.
Has that as well. Yeah,
let's do it.
You'd probably see some body checks.
Now the only thing is, we need before this, as Wyshynski was saying, you know, the best part of the Royal Rumble is that. You know who's coming out because when their music hits,
right?
So we need to like take.
Yeah, we would.
We need to take a
order.
Few years to establish each NHL player's entrance music.
Bring back individual goal songs.
Yeah,
get used to whose music.
And then it would hit and be like, "That's Jaromir Jagr's music. He's back."
There would definitely have to be some big returns. Gretzky is making
Can
an
you
appearance.
Imagine? Just someone just lays out like Claude Lemieux. Who's there? It's like, oh, this is my chance. Some of the Suns take out the the old dads. Vendettas of fathers.
Yeah.
Be
yeah.
like, you wronged my father. I'm taking it out on you now.
The Kachucks team up.
I would be excited for like the offside review. It's like the puck went out of the zone. No, it didn't. Throw the challenge flag. Slows down the competition for a 3-minute review. Be like, yeah. You're right.
You have to go back in.
Just the incessant booing from the crowd. That would be great.
We got some good ideas. We're generating a lot of great ideas.
What other events? Yeah, I'm telling you, that's the best. I'd rather watch that than
the goalie one for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything goalie related. Great goalies. Idea. We'll come up with some more great ideas and continue that tanking conversation. Plus, look at ahead of who the Canucks are trending towards, of who they become. That conversation and more coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Sportsnet 650. It's the home of the Canucks. Vic Nizar, Jamie Dodd on Canucks Central talking about other all-star ideas for skills competition.
We got some good ones coming in.
I came up with the Royal Rumble idea.
It's pretty good.
Well, you just brought something up. Is what if there are just no pucks?
Yeah, just make it physical. Because in the Rumble, it's
they don't
know,
even take the All-Star game seriously. They're not going to take
the
competition
seriously.
I know,
but we're talking pie in the sky, man. Okay. You know, let's blue sky this bad boy.
What would be interesting, though, is if there was a physical aspect of it and you just had to push someone outside of the blue line, right? How players would team up to go against Matt Tkachuk.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be first up. He has his backup.
He has Brady.
He would be the Brock Lesnar of the NHL
Rumble. Oh, man,
he
would have backup.
He's got Brady. And apparently,
he would have other flames there.
Reading some of the reporting,
Giordano would help him out.
Quinn Hughes and the Tkachuks. Very close.
The American tie-ins?
Yeah. Quinn Hughes apparently lived with Brady and Keith.
Oh, man, this is a great idea.
They're like a faction.
Quinn Hughes like pulls off his Canucks All-Star jersey. He's got a Tkachuk t-shirt underneath.
Can you imagine the chaos that would reign in fan bases if someone's just like...
The best part of this would be like, okay, now we're going to see who's really friends.
Yeah.
Right? That would be the best part.
Again, the puck possession challenge, whatever you want to call it.
It's a good one.
We were trying to think what that drill is called in basketball or soccer or whatever you do. Keep away?
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Like that.
But that'd be a great one.
We got another good one in here. Unsigned in the Subway text message inbox 650-650. If you've got some all-star weekend ideas, he says, all-star game should be under 25 versus the over 25s. Neither team would want to lose. It would be a game. As you deemed it, the OK Boomer Bull.
Although that age is probably too,
not,
too
they're
low.
Not boomers, but whatever. Yeah. It's close enough.
It'd be funny. I see what you're trying to do. Thane writing in, individual goal song sucked. We were talking about that because of the skate into the Royal Rumble for hockey. You would have individual goal songs. Here's the thing. The idea of individual goal songs is awesome. A lot of players chose bad songs.
The execution was poor.
Yeah. You just had some bad songs. But you got to live with the bad to get to the good versions.
It's a great idea in theory.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have a point, but have some fun with the individuality of hockey players.
That's what this weekend is all about. And hopefully we get to see some of it tonight.
We were talking about something early on before Greg Wyshynski joined us. We'll re-kick it up now. Just, has your opinion on tanking changed? And, you know, team building is such a difficult process, too. I agree with the strategy of it. I can't deny the math of it. It's if you have higher draft capital, you're more likely to succeed. If you pick the right people. But there's an overarching human element to it. And look, I've championed teams tanking, and it's fun at times, but it feels like you have to be at a certain point in your organizational life cycle to want to embrace that idea. Like, if Detroit wanted to embrace it right now, I would understand. And there is a difference between just losing in general and just wanting to try, like aspiring to be the worst. Like, there's a big difference in that.
Very big difference. And the strongest argument for tanking in the NHL context was you look at the teams in the last decade that have had the most success. You got Pittsburgh, Chicago, LA. All of those teams did it on the back of usually multiple very high draft picks. So it was an easy line to draw from, okay, get a bunch of first, second, third picks, draft well, and you're going to win a Stanley Cup, right? It was easy to look at that.
Some teams have had success having top five picks,
yeah,
right? L.A., Chicago.
Exactly.
They got superstars that led them to winning, but they didn't
try
to get there.
And 3 years ago, I probably would have said, well, what's the difference? That doesn't matter. But just looking at how things have progressed since then, I'm starting to lean towards, well, maybe that does actually matter. Maybe you have to just kind of luck into these high picks, because if you are purposely trying to finish at the bottom of the standings, you're just digging yourself a hole.
Well,
it's too hard to get out of.
I've made the point now that the Canucks have to kind of be all in with making the playoffs, not necessarily spending everything every year, but once you get Elias Pettersson, that's it. Like, you're done. Like, we just don't talk about the draft as much anymore.
No.
Because they have Elias Pettersson, and you have to go to the playoffs. You have to go to the playoffs. There's an 11-year peak window where Elias Pettersson is going to be the best player on the team. And this is basically year one of that. You have, again, you get 11 shots at this.
Yeah.
And the goal is to get, like, the next Elias Pettersson, but that's tougher from the middle parts of the draft.
And there's,
that's just the reality.
I've seen fans suggest, you know, oh, it would be better if they actually, if they miss the playoffs and they get another high draft pick. And, man,
but
when you've got this core, I don't see it.
We've talked about that in relation to Elias Pettersson. The guy who came before all of this is Bo Horvat,
mm-hmm.
who got a very small taste of it and then has had to sit idly by. He's like that SpongeBob meme when all his friends play outside and he's stuck inside. That's what this is. He's had to live through the idea of, man, losing really sucks. And if you institutionally decide to do that, there's a human element of, can you get players out of that downtrodden feeling? And then can you get as an organization? Like, it's soul-sucking to tank. It really is. And that's the issue, is from an ownership top-down level, can you get enough people to buy into the idea? And I think it's tough for owners to say, yeah, I want to live on this ride, because there's going to be ups and downs throughout that process. And at one point, does somebody want to say, hey, I want to get off?
And
if you don't follow through in it, then you're stuck in no man's land.
I think the hardest thing is you have to bring in executives and coaches who are on board with the idea. And it's just such a hard sell. You're limiting yourself to such a smaller pool of guys. And that, you look at Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns, right? They are accumulating draft assets. They were going to be the team of the future, and they fell flat on their face this year. And they have lots of talent on the roster, but because of the state of the organization and their reputation and what the league thought about what they were doing, they were never able to bring in that top-tier coaching candidate. And really, that's what it came down to this season for them. It wasn't the talent on the field so much. It was the infrastructure around it that they were not able to build in the interim. So it's not just what it does to the players. Obviously, if you're drafting high consistently, you're going to accumulate talent in whatever sport you're playing. It's the everything else that goes around them. Are you going to be able to accumulate talent there? Are you going to be able to put the right structures in place that, hey, when you want to win, you're able to smoothly transition to doing that?
I also look at that as, is it kind of a scarlet letter type deal? That if you do this, you're always the franchise that decided to tank. And how attractive is that to players or coaches or execs that, yeah, there's only so many of these jobs, but will your motivations ever change? Coaches want to win every single night. That's how this works.
Yep.
Every single night, they go out to get 2 points. Whether they have the talent to do so, different story. But their intention is to go out and get 2 points. So if you're trying to be an attractive destination, does somebody side-eye you and say, you know what, you were the franchise that kind of encouraged the antithesis of my identity?
Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, look at, let's say, the Philadelphia 76ers, right? Sam Hinkie. He ruffled some feathers in the NBA. And when the Sixers eventually decided to transition to winning, they did it without him. Probably will not work in the NBA as a general manager again. Sashi Brown in Cleveland, same thing. Ruffled a lot of feathers. Now he's not there. He's not going to be able to see the fruits of his labors. Even in Houston, where they did win the World Series, their GM is out. And it's for different reasons, but it's all tied together because he was pushing the envelope and he just went way too far. He's out, probably won't be a general manager in baseball again. So there's a lot of reputation at stake. And you know, we always criticize not just the NHL, but every league for hiring retreads, right? Same old coaches, same old GMs keep getting shots. But to keep yourself in that mix, you have to have a certain level of reputation around the league. And tanking and doing a purposeful tear down extreme tank is one of the ways you lose that reputation.
I'm not sure if anyone's even doing that now. Like, I think Detroit's just bad.
Detroit's just really bad.
Like, they made investments on the idea of we want to compete, and they're on the back end of those, and they're just not working. Like, Justin Abdelkader was not signed as a tanking inspiration. Franz Nielsen was not signed to do that. And you can go on and on through this team that you just find those examples. They believed in Danny DeKeyser. He's now a $5 million D-man that they're just never going to get that value back. They have certain pieces where they're just organically losing. It's just this is special levels of losing.
They're just so bad.
And so
you look, well, just look at some of the other really bad teams in the league. Ottawa, New Jersey. New Jersey thought they were going to the playoffs this year. Ottawa is just incompetent. They're not doing it on purpose. They're just bad at building a hockey team.
We should they say they're like they're in the infancy of actually on the right end.
For sure. And things are trending in the right direction there for Ottawa.
We'll get to more of that. Pleased to be joined now with Rand Pechnold of the Quinnipiac head coach for the Bobcats and also formerly Brogan Rafferty's head coach. Coach, thanks a lot for giving us some time here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
I guess one of the things we want to talk about with you is obviously with Brogan's career, just you know what attracted you to him as far as bringing him into your program and you know just what he showed at the college level that is translated to the pro level now.
Yeah, well, Brogan's a really interesting story. Like, you know, they talk a lot about late bloomers and then that's, you know, that's the path that he followed. So his whole life growing up, he never played AAA hockey, which is you know, crazy. I'm a parent of a AAA kid. Like, we all have all these parents out here. We run all over the place with our kids to get them in AAA hockey and tournaments all over the world. And Brogan never did that. So he was a late bloomer. We got him at age 19 out of the North American League. He was playing in Cooley Region and, you know, liked what he did. But he had an upside, but he was still a little raw. And honestly, we thought he was going to come in and probably be like a 7th-8th defenseman for us. And then, you know, we got him we have a great strength coach, got him in our strength program, and he just kind of took off. And we had just lost Devon Toews, had just signed early with the Islanders, and, you know, he's up running. He ran my first power play, right, an Abbotsford kid and who played in Surrey. And anyway, Raph was really good out of the gate, and I said, you know what, maybe he can run that first power play. So he went from being a 7-8 to being a top 4-D immediately and kind of blossomed and had a great 3 years with us. Would have loved to have had him for 4, but that's okay. Signed early, and you know, he's just a really good hockey player.
Is his early success here at the AHL level surprising at all to you, or did you feel like that compete level that you're talking about was always going to stand out as soon as he got a chance?
You know, I knew he was going to be like, I know he's an NHL player. I was wondering how long it would take with seasoning. I know he played 2 games at the end of last year with Canucks, but I knew he would make the NHL. Like, he's that good. And, like, he does some things that you just can't teach. You know, his poise with the puck. He's got great vision. And he's got just a knack of kind of on the power play of kind of holding the puck and moving it when it needs to be moved. And, I know it seems like a simple thing, but there's some guys that are good at it and some guys just aren't. He knows when to shoot. He knows when to pass. Really good on the power play breakout. And I think the big thing for me was, you know, he was going to make the NHL, but it was just a matter of how long it was going to take him. Is it a little quicker than I thought with how much success he had in the NHL? Maybe a little bit, but I knew he was going to be good.
Rand, you had Brogan for 3 years at Quinnipiac. How did you see him develop over the course of your time with him? Because, as you said, he was a late bloomer. He had pretty immediate success in college, but how did he grow from his first year with you to his third year?
Well, I think the big thing that Brogan needed to work, like, the offense comes easy for him. So the big thing that we had to work on with him was just, you know, defending and working on his skating a little bit, his pivots, getting better with stick on puck, defending, making better reads. And the big thing also was penalty kill. And each year he matured, did a nice job with that. He kind of really popped defensively for us. I think probably February of his sophomore year, his second year with us, he kind of just made a bigger commitment to it. And then last year as a junior, like, he was, you know, he was excellent. He probably should have been an All-American. He wasn't, but he probably easily could have been.
And, you know, you talk about the commitment he showed and how he stepped up and really bought in. What's he like off the ice? And, you know, I mean that both in the sense of how he prepares and how he works, but also just as a person, as a guy. What's he like away from the rink?
Yeah, really high character kid, awesome teammate. I mean, he was a joy, a pleasure to coach. You know, give you an example of how good of a kid he is and how high character. Like, he, you know, he graduated in 3 years from Quinnipiac. If he had come back for his fourth year, he was going to start his MBA. So, you know, there's not a lot of kids playing college hockey at a top 10 program and accelerate and go to graduate in 3 years. You know, he's taking classes in the summer and wanted to finish. He was on path to finish his MBA in just that 1 year. So he would have done 6 years of schooling and four if he had come back this year. So that just shows how dedicated he is, how much he understands an education means to him, and, you know, just a great kid.
Do you kind of find that he fits this mold of where the modern D-man is going, kind of more mobility-based rather than just the traditional prototype of, you know, that rugged physical kind of guy?
Absolutely, yeah. He's exactly what the NHL wants right now, you know, and there's all different levels of him, but, you know, Torrey Krug was, you know, a lot of teams were after him when he was coming out of Michigan State, and obviously he's done great for the Bruins. You know, Brogan had, you know, a ton of NHL interest. I thought the Canucks did a great job of recruiting him. I can't remember exactly how many there were, but I remember sitting him there with my office when he finally decided on Vancouver. But it was, you know, he narrowed it down to five or six, but he had probably maybe 10, 11, 12 teams. I can't even remember, but there was a lot of teams, and I thought Vancouver, like I said, did a really good job of recruiting him, because that's what it was. It was a recruiting war to get him to land there.
What do you think it was about the Canucks that made Brogan choose them over all the other suitors?
I just think they did a good job. They were very sincere in their process. They worked hard at it, and I think also it was a good fit for him the way they play. You know, they didn't have a lot of depth with Rice Shot, you know, skilled D, and, you know, and they're kind of a building team. I thought it was the right fit for him. He asked me what I thought I should do, and I thought he should sign with Vancouver, and certainly I'm not the end-all be-all. He had plenty of other people giving him advice, but I just thought it was the right fit for him, and you know, it's an up-and-coming team, and I also told him, I said, Brogan, like, Vancouver is an awesome place to live. You know, my parents are from Vancouver. You know, I grew up going to Cultus Lake in the summers and stuff, even though I'm American, but I thought that's part of it too. It's a great, you know, it's a great lifestyle out there.
Coach, when you're trying to bring players into your program nowadays, and, you know, I was alluding to the evolution of the game, you know, what's the biggest changes you've seen as you've evolved in the job too? That, you know, what stands out to you and what you're looking for players when they arrive at your program?
I mean, the big thing that, obviously, you know, we want talent. You know, everybody wants talent. That's simple. But I think we, you know, in order for Quinnipiac to succeed, you know, we need high character, high hockey IQ kids. That fit our system and are very selfless. You know, we've had a really good run here at Quinnipiac over the last 7, 8, 9 years. I think we're top five in wins, top five in PK, top five in power play. A lot of our kids that we've gotten have actually been from British Columbia. That's kind of probably our number one pipeline. We've had a lot of success with kids, Western Canadians, who fit that character of that mold of high character and high hockey IQ and a lot of skill.
You allude to, you know, just how you guys recruited in this area. Obviously, Devin Tay is one of them, and, you know, a local product. And you guys have kind of been a factory here of defense coming in here. Connor Clifton, you had Devin Tay. Now Brogan Rafferty is another one. What's helping springboard those players into NHL success?
You know, I think we have a really good development plan, and we do a good job coaching our D. You know, Joey Dume runs the D for us now. Certainly I'm involved too, but Joe does a great job. I think he's excellent. I think he's an NHL caliber coach. My previous D coach was Reed Cashman, who's actually left me to go to the Washington Capitals. He's now running the D for the Capitals. So I just think we put a lot of effort into it. And, you know, I think we also recruit the right type of kid. You know, guys that want to learn, that want to put the time in to get better. And it's been a good run for us.
He is Rand Pecknold, the Quinnipiac head coach and former coach of Brogan Rafferty. Coach, I know it's a busy time. Appreciate you sparing a couple of minutes for us.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you very much.
That is head coach Rand Pecknold joining Canucks Central here. And again, a player that a lot of people are excited about with Brogan Rafferty. I know he was on the station yesterday, but it's nice to get another perspective of, you know, where a player came from can tell you where he is going.
And listen, man, not a name that probably a lot of Canucks fans knew, Rand Pecknold, but we owe him a debt of gratitude. He was boosted in Vancouver, recommended the Canucks, got a lot of nice things to say, not just about the city, about the region, and He's one of our number one boosters, so thank you, Rand.
Going to slowly become a cult legend.
Absolutely.
In Vancouver, so start up the steady drumbeat of Rand Pecknold.
Our boy Rand.
I mean, we know now, if there's a college free agent that goes to Quinnipiac, Canucks have the inside track.
Let's go.
You know that.
He's going to be saying, hey, Cultus Lake, it's a beautiful place. Go play for the Canucks.
No, but look, it's some interesting stuff there just about that compete level, right? Of coming into a stage of, there are some established guys here, and we have an expectation of, okay, you're going to be the seventh D-man, and forces his way beyond that. And I highlighted just the idea that there's a success factor that these D-men are having right now coming from that program. Obviously, people from this area know Devin Toews, what he's doing with the Islanders. Connor Clifton had a great showing in the playoffs, and someone that, you know, jumped up to a bigger stage and wasn't shook by it. Brogan Rafferty, is he the next line of D-men that come from this program that are now, you know, meet a baseline, and can he exceed that?
And the thing that Rand touched on that I think is really impressive is, you know, he's not just a late bloomer. He's a really late bloomer, Brogan Rafferty. And in hockey, as much as everyone wants to think it's a pure meritocracy, you get it labeled early, right? And you have a certain pedigree, and that affects the opportunities
Think how many early first-rounders
get chance after chance
that
after chance.
That we know are just okay players.
Yeah.
Okay players.
Lucas Pisa is still in the league, in part because he's a first-round draft pick, right? And we saw all of the chances he got in top four roles over and over again because he has that pedigree. When you lack that pedigree and you never played AAA hockey, you were never well regarded relative to your age as a young player, there's a stigma against that. And you have to fight constantly to exceed people's expectations, to show you belong, to show that you can handle more and more responsibility. We heard Rand Pecknold say that Rafferty was able to do that right away in college, and that's what he's done so far in the AHL too. No one really expected him to be at almost a point per game in his first AHL season. That's the most heartening thing, and the reason I'm really high on Brogan Rafferty is he's shown time and again he's going to blow past people's expectations.
That pedigree is always so fascinating. I always look at a guy like Jack Skilly, top 10 player in a draft, had a 10-year career. 10-year NHL career, never had more than 20 points.
Yep. Eric Goodbranson is like a classic example to me as well.
Now,
like, if he was a fifth-round pick, would he be in the league right now?
It's a fair question, right? And there's a prototype. And, okay, I should say, like, there's a physicality and an athletic component to all this that Jack Skilly was a power forward. Had some athletic traits that were desirable and could a coach convince him to be like, hey, I can be the one to drag more out of this player.
Same with Goodbranson, same with Spezza, right? They're big physical specimens.
And I think we're starting to see the fruits of some of that with someone like Jake Virtanen, a top-type player. Now, I'm not trying to compare Jake to any of these players. It just, that's what we're talking about. You're going to get chance after chance after chance because of your status, because you have an athletic threshold that teams will value. And, like, even today, if Elliot Friedman were to come on today, be like, oh, well, what's the – if someone was really frustrated with Jake Virtanen, he said it many times, there's always going to be a desire to trade for someone like that.
People will take it on as a reclamation project, no doubt, because
that
first-round label, that sticks with you for a long time. And, again, conversely, I think people underrate just how hard it is to overcome that kind of – oh, you're nothing. You didn't even play AAA. You're playing in the North American League. You started college late, all that. It's hard to overcome all of those different labels.
And it provides a burning desire for someone like Brogan Rafferty to constantly improve, constantly step up. Troy Stetcher is one of those guys who, even when it feels like, hey, Troy, you're an NHL player now, you really belong, he's still battling.
Feels like he probably feels like he has to prove it every day, day in and day out, in a way that other guys don't.
And he shows it often. He's always battling. We are coming to a close on the end of our bye week All-Star Game coverage. The next edition of Canucks Central will have
Canucks Game Day.
A Canucks Game Day. That's next week. But as we're talking about guys battling onto the roster, can they improve? Part of that is their AHL development. We talked to Brogan Rafferty's college head coach. What about his AHL head coach?
Let's go. If you want just more Brogan Rafferty perspectives, we've got you covered.
And more.
Can we get his high school coach on?
You know, there's been some encouraging stories coming out of Utica. Not just how good the team has been because of Savan Berge, Nikolai Goldobin, because they have a certain pedigree that they can lift that team. But, hey, don't look now. Cole Lynn's having a really good season.
Yep.
Jonah Gadvich has improved a bit.
Ole Levy is producing.
Where is all those players, where are they at in their development? Well, Trent Call is the man that oversees it all, and Trent Call will be joining Reach Deep with Dan Riccio and Dom Shimati coming up here in a couple of minutes. Jamie, thank you very much. We'll be back Monday with Scott Rintoul on Canucks Central. A lot getting ready for. Hope you enjoy the skills competition later today. And again, Trent Call on the way here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.